Fine. So let's begin with, for those that are not making Pesach, I mean, parts of this is going to be to get everybody, but more specifically for people that are not making Pesach. So the very classic question is, what exactly is the obligation of Bedikah if you're not making Pesach? So halachically speaking, if you don't take the avenue of selling anything, so you're obligated to do bedikah whenever you leave your house. So if you're leaving your house the Monday before Pesach, so you have to do it Sunday night. The night preceding whenever it is that you're going to leave is when you're obligated to do bedikah. You don't make a bracha on that bedikah, but other than that, many places in Maldi do make a bracha on that bedikah. We don't, it's a suffix bracha, but it's a full bona fide bedikah. You're kind of the mitzvah of bedikah's chametz as well. You say kal chamira, you say bittul after you finish that bedikah. It has all the halachas of a bedikas chametz, meaning to say you're not allowed to eat. When it becomes night, you're not allowed to learn. It's a full-blown halachic bedikah. Now that's, again, if you choose to do the bedikah. Obviously, if you choose to do the bedikah, you get a mitzvah, which is a wonderful thing. But you do have to clean your house, because you can't do a bedikah in a house that hasn't been cleaned. The house has to be cleaned in order to do a bedikah. Cleaning doesn't mean to the extent where you would probably clean were you to be staying for Pesach. But a basic cleaning is necessary. You have to remove chametz, and whatever chametz you're leaving, you're selling, needs to be put in a specific place. You can't have chametz scattered around the house. So if you do want to do, which hashkafically speaking, I'm for that, doing a bedikah and cleaning and doing a bedikah, obviously depends on your situation, depends on, you know, what your wife is able to, what you're able to do, and it's not something that should be done if it's going to put undue pressure on the whole household, then it's not worth it. But if it's doable, you know, it's a little extra effort, then it is kedai. It's a mitzvah. It's a mitzvah that comes along with a lot of side benefits. There's a lot of schoolists in this particular mitzvah. The inyan of putting yourself into destroying the chametz has a very big effect on a person's ruchnius as well, you know, to what it symbolizes, to help you get control over every person's individual yetzahara, which the chametz represents. So the concept is a beautiful concept. Again, like I said, it's difficult. That needs to be kept in mind. But there is something to be said for doing this mitzvah, and of course it's also a mitzvah. Now, you do have the option, as far as the key mitzvah is concerned, you can also sell most of your house and leave over a room and do bedikah on that room. And that's also acceptable, and you'll be in the kind of mitzvah that way as well. So in order to do that, so there's a few things you have to do. So in order to do that, you have to sell your house. That l'chadchila, that sale is not the typical chametz sale. Typical chametz sale takes place before the Zman on Erev Pesach. But if you want to sell your house in order that you shouldn't be obligated in Bedikah, many shittas hold it should be done the day previous, in order that by the time the night of Bedikah's chametz comes around, you're ready, the house is not yours anymore. Other places can say you don't need that, as long as when Pesach will be there, it won't be your house, so then retroactively you're not obligated in Bedikah. So it doesn't make a difference. The sale could take place the next day. As long as that's the fact, the sale is in place, then you're not obligated. But most of us, and you know, it's very easy to do, you have the sale set up so that it already takes place from the previous day, and you sell your house, and you have to write that into the shtar, that you're selling your whole house, and you leave over a room. Now, what's important to do though, is to leave over a room that's really chayv in bedikah. If you leave over your bathroom, that's not going to help you too much. Your bathroom is not really chayv in bedikah. It's not really a makom shemachnisim bechametz. You know, it's not a typical place to bring chametz in there, even though, you know, with children, we consider every place to be makom shemachnisim bechametz, which they are. But still, that's like misafik, you know, of course, when we're baitik everywhere. But if you're just going to leave one room in order to be mekayim the mitzvah bedikah, you do have to leave a room that's an authentic makom shemachnisim bechametz. So, you know, wherever it is, maybe a kid's bedroom, you know, or if they bring food there, if you're usually makbid, they shouldn't bring food there, then you should prefer to take a room which is more typically a makam shemachnisim bechametz. And if you do that, so then that room that you've left over, you're mechoyiv in bedikah, and you can make a bracha, and you have all these halachas. You can't eat, and you can't learn, and the night, you know, whenever it is you're going to be doing that bedikah, whether it's the night before, if it's the night the 14th, then you'll make the bracha. If you're doing it earlier, you won't make the bracha, but it is a full-blown bedikah on that room, so it has to be treated with all the halacha and all the halachas that come along with the bedikah as well. But that's also very nice. It's a very good option. If it's not practical for you to clean your whole house and to be baidik your whole house, then definitely it is worth it to do this, to be mishayer part of your house in order to be baidik that part of your house. Now, even if a person does sell his house, and certainly if you don't sell your house, this is applicable to everybody, there is a number of things that you're going to have to be baidik no matter what. You're going to have to be baidik your cars, right? You have to clean your cars, which you're using over Pesach, and you're going to have to be baidik them. Likewise, you will have to be baidik your pockets, and, you know, the clothing that you're taking along. In other words, those you'll have to be baidik. You'll have to be baidik your suitcases, and whatever it is you're taking along with you, those are chiv bedika. We don't make a bracha on those bedikas. The bracha would only be on a bedika of a house. If someone is going to a hotel, which I'm not chayshir anybody here, but... I wish I could, you know, but at least from a financial point of view. But if someone would be going to a hotel, so then the halacha is that if you get there before the night of the 14th, you're obligated in bedika of your room. Because, you know, the halasecher lived like, and renting a room is obligates you to do bedika as much as owning a room. Likewise, this is a little debatable, but if someone moves in to in-laws, parents, and is there for a few days, and they haven't yet made it chametz free, which is very unlikely, but let's say they moved in already from, I don't know, Chodesh Nisan or something, so you've been there for a while, you used chametz in that room, so you have an obligation to be baidik that room. Anyway, most people help out their father or father-in-law doing the bedika, so you can do that as well. Your yaitzeh with his bracha doesn't really make any practical difference, but that's another way that you can possibly be mekayim the mitzvah. So to sum up, chiyuv bedika applies to all those things. Even if you're not home for Pesach, you do have to be baidik your car, you do have to be baidik your pockets. You know, the best is if you're the night of the 14th, you're by your father, so listen to his bracha and then do the bedika on that as well, on your car and so on and so forth. I'll talk about it a little later whether the car has to be that night or you could do it by day. When we get to bedika proper, I'll discuss that a little bit more. Now, about mechiras chametz. This is relevant to everybody when it comes to mechiras chametz. So typically, there's two minhagim. Some people sell chametz gamer, and some people do not. The people who do not sell chametz gamer, the reason is because they are worried that this mechira is somewhat suspect. The guy always finds it very amusing. I watched a number of mechiras chametz, and you know, you explain to him with all the severity of, yes, you know, that you're buying a few million dollars worth of chametz. Because usually, you know, you put together many, many hundreds of shtaris. And if you want to keep it, you can keep it. We'll make up a price. You know, you explain all that to him, but he doesn't. The question of how seriously he takes it. Interestingly, though, as far as the seller, us, is concerned, that there's no suffix. We are certainly mean to sell what we're selling because we don't want to be over in Avera. And it doesn't even help us to hold on to it because it'll become Chom Sharval of a Pesach. So there's no doubt that us, as sellers, mean to sell. Question is the guy really mean to buy? Is it a real mechirit? He doesn't have access to it. So there's these sort of sakas. Halachically speaking, it's simon in Shulchan Aruch, and it's condoned by all the paiskim, so it can be done, obviously. But some people have a minik to be more machmer and not to, and just to see to it that they don't have any chametz gamer left over and they don't sell any chametz gamer. So that's, some people have a minik. Others have a minik not to be machmer on that, and el ve'el de'el kim chayim. Both ways are fine, whatever your minik is. If you have no minik, you can choose one. They're both valid. Whiskey is interesting. Whiskey and other forms of schnapps, which are, you know, made out of distilled alcohol, which has been distilled from wheat. It's funny that people say it's not chametz gomer. That's not really correct. Almost 99.9% of places can say it's chametz gomer. It's real, real chametz. The fact that it's distilled doesn't change anything. It's a component of wheat. It's real chametz. What they'd say, though, is that it's expensive. So it's hefsed meruba. And there, that's where really the point of this whole mechira initially was made, was for that reason, because of hefsed meruba. It was made for people that, there was a point in history of the Yidden that this was the main parnasa that many, many Yidden had, was to run a bar, basically, a kretschme, as it used to be called. That's what they had, and they had all their equipment in their basement, and they had merchandise worth many hundreds of rubles, whatever the currency was, and there was no option other than to sell it. And that's where this was really instituted. If you look in the Paiskim, the Chuvis, one after another, all talking about Yain Sarf, Yain Sarf, Yain Sarf. That's what it was. Groceries, they didn't really have such a method of storing food. right? They didn't have freezers and refrigerators, so there wasn't such an issue of they had, you know, stock on the shelves. Now we have that too, you know, the groceries sell their stock, but that wasn't it. What the main thing it was instituted for was for people with whiskey. So, like, my point is, though, the fact is that even people that are makbid not to sell chametz gomer, almost everybody sells whiskey and beer and etc. I mean, beer, I don't know as much, but definitely more expensive, the whiskeys and so on and so forth, is sold. There are some places can hold it's not chametz gomer, and it is a hefzer merubah, so we're saying on that as well. That having been said, even if you do sell chametz gomer, so, you know, it's one thing if you have, you know, some boxes of macaroni and you have things like that, so that's, I you know, that makes sense to sell, but like if you have a half a luxury puzzle left over in your freezer, that might be more worth it not to sell. It's not really a hefzid, you know, I'm not telling anybody what to do, but, you know, in the svara of what this takana was made for, it wasn't made really for that. It was made, you know, if you have a significant amount of chametz, so you can sell it, and you can sell the half a luxury puzzle as well. But I'm just saying, in Svara, that wasn't really what it was made for. So the stuff left over, you know, you don't really need to. It's probably better to just to burn it and kind of tishbisu and kind of mix it with it. Go ahead. Or eat it.
Isn't chametz like isn't it kind of an all or nothing thing, though? So if the mechira works, then why not just throw everything in?
Well, you're over on every kazayas. Bal yirah, you're over on every kazayas. So whatever less you don't need to rely on it, the better off you are. So that's your benefit. I'm sorry?
In terms of the shavkir,
yeah.
It includes? So
yeah.
Does it include items
that
have maltodextrin?
Yeah. So when you write the shtar mechira, we write everything in. We throw the kitchen sink, literally. It says the kitchen sink there. Okay, you throw everything into a shtar mechira, bleez shabekalim, things that don't need to be sold. You throw everything in. Things that even can't be sold are written in there as well. You know, things that, you know, doesn't make sense to sell. But you throw everything in because that's the minig. When you make a mechira, you make a mechira and everything. And that's why the minig is, even if you think you have no chametz to sell, you should write a shtar mechira anyway. That's what place can say, because, you know, just in case, you forgot something, you missed something, it'll be sold to a guy. That's why, technically speaking, and I've witnessed this a number of times, if you do find chametz in your house over Pesach, you know, so after you recover from fainting and, you know, you've been revived, it's good to know it doesn't really belong to you, that chametz. So there's really nothing wrong, technically. Last year I was somewhere, and they opened the freezer, and there was something in the back of the freezer. They opened it up, and there was chametz there. And whatever, the whole story, why it was there, why it hadn't been taken out, catastrophized, but it was horrifying. But the fact was, it didn't belong to the person, and there's a whole shiloh, what are you supposed to do with it? Because you really can't burn it. It doesn't belong to you. You would have to ask permission from the guy to burn it. So this whole halacha of you find chametz on Pesach, you're supposed to burn it, it doesn't apply if it's been sold. So other places can say that you do bar and burn it, because the guy is fine, he's okay if you burn it, he doesn't need your, you know, ice cream cone or whatever it is you forgot to throw out. So there are minhagim, different minhagim when it comes to this, if you do happen to find chametz in your house on Pesach. But mekar din, you don't have to, you certainly don't have to burn it, and all you need to do is put it together with the rest of the chametz that is been sold to the guy, which obviously needs to be put in a separate place. The best is to lock it up. If you can't lock it up, to put a very clear siman on it that this is the guy's chametz, and, you know, just so you won't come to eat it. Now, as far as selling, you don't need to sell kidneys. Rice, beans, etc. Kidneys does not need to be sold. Kidneys does not have to be taken out of your house, because kidneys is just a gezeira. It's a derabanan, a minhig actually, and the minhig is just not to eat it. There's no bal yirah on kidneys, so the kidneys does not need to be sold. This needs to be put away. Plato is a good question. Plato is real chametz. Plato is chametz gomer. I'm willing to bet that everybody here has tasted Plato at some point in their lives. And it is edible, as you might know. You know, it does not necessarily so tasty, but it is edible. And therefore, one would think it's edible, it's chametz, so it's chametz gomer. So either throw it away, or if you sell it, sell it. The interesting thing is, there's another halacha in Hilchos Chametz that something chametz which has been designated for a use, not for eating, it's been designated for another use. The case of the Gemara is you took a block of yeast and you solidified it and made it into a cheer. So the halacha is, it's not, you can keep it in your house. You can't eat it, but you can keep it in your house. You don't have to sell it. You're not everybody or buy matzah on it, because now it's a cheer, not chametz anymore. So there are those paiskim that hold that Plato is the same thing. Play-Doh has been designated for a toy, so it's not chametz anymore, and therefore you should have to put it away because you can't eat it, but you don't need to sell it. You find it in your house, you know, you don't have to worry about it. But there is debate about this because it could be it's only by deer where you've actually made it into a keli. That takes away the status of chametz because you've turned it from a food into a keli. Whereas if you just designate it for a use, that doesn't destroy its status of a food. So other price can say it should be sold. Mashver told me he asked Rav Dussmann Zatzal, who was on the Beis Din of Chaim Oizer, and he said you should sell it. So it's best to put it together with the rest of the stuff that you're selling. Regardless, now what you'll see in the Shtar Mechira, it says please write where you keep all your chametz, because typically, especially if you're making Pesach, you do keep all your chametz in one place, like especially the medications or whatever it is that you're not sure about, so you will put them into one of the medicine cabinets that you close off. So you should write where they are. And the concept is because, again, we're trying to make the mechira as real as possible. And in order that it should be real, the guy has to know where the chametz is in order that he should be able to access it. However, it does include chametz wherever it is as well. We don't limit it to those places, but it's best to write them in. It makes the mechira a little bit more valid. So that's why you should do it, and you should try to keep your chametz localized in one or two places that you're able to write in. Again, you have to worry about it because we do include everything as well. But it does have that it gives that extra validity to the mechira, so that's why it's important to do that, to try to keep the comments local in one place.
So if you lock it up, you would
the key is also... That also as well. The guy has to have access, right? So you can leave the key in on-premises, but he has to have access. He has to have access to you, at least. He has to be able to get to the comments in order that it should be real. That's why also, if you're going out of town, it's not really solo chachila to go to New York and sell it to a guy in New York because he doesn't really have access over here. You're not coming here. So the mechira should be, if you're here, the mechira should be done here. If you're going away, you know, try to do the mechira before you go. You could do it over the phone as well. You don't have to really be here. You can call myself or any other rav up and he'll take care of it for you, even though we do this Kenyan Sutter, you know, it's not ma'akev, you can do the mechir without that. So the best is to do a mechir with a guy who lives near your chametz.
How does he have access to the...
So you leave your number so that you can tell him how to get in if he wants to. Or you can leave it with the rav, you know. You have to leave a key with the rav. You have to tell me how to add where the key is, how to get access. I can get in touch with you. As long as I can find some way to get in, then that's enough. It has to be possible.
Can we access that area in our house where we localize the chametz? Are we allowed to go into that area?
So that's an interesting question. When we sell chametz to a guy, we also sell the place under the chametz.
Yeah.
Now, if you have a whole room full of chametz, then the whole room is sold to a guy. Usually we write in the shtar that you have permission to access the room for other things. But generally, it's not really so relevant because... let's say you have your chametz in a cabinet, right? So you lock off that cabinet. So that cabinet is the guy. The rest of the room is fine. The rest of the room is not sold to the guy. Just that cabinet, and he also has right of access. You give him access. You don't actually rent it to him. The space of the cabinet itself is rented to him. So it's not really, it doesn't end up being relevant. One thing we will do, I don't know how everybody else works it out, but we have an issue with the garbage collection this year because it's going to be after... you know, on Monday or whenever it is during the week, you'll have chametz in your garbage. So obviously the best thing to do is after the last garbage pickup, try to designate a garbage at least for chametz gomer. You know, you have one garbage for chametz gomer, so this way whatever is real chametz, you know, you're not talking about crumbs and stuff like that, but the real chametz that you're throwing out should be, one, have a designated garbage for that, so that you can take that and throw it in one of the bins, throw it in the park garbage, whatever, however you choose to get rid of it. You know, and it's a. I'm sorry?
Can you put it in a neighbor's?
It doesn't mind. Yeah, it works, yeah.
Building?
Well?
In an apartment building, if you throw it down, it should
work. Lachara, that should work, yeah. I'm sorry?
What do you put? I didn't hear you. What do you
put? I was saying that after your last garbage pickup, the best thing is that you should designate a garbage, like a garbage bag, where you're going to put the real chametz in from that point and on. You know, you can also save some to burn, but whatever you're throwing out, just designate it so that at least the chametz gomer you'll know you'll have out of your house and you'll throw it. They have bins sometimes. I know some shuls do that. They organize a bin, or you'll throw it in some public garbage somewhere.
Can we just put it on the street in front of our house, in the street?
So you could do that. That's okay if you're able to do that. I mean, this year it's not so bad. It's Friday till Monday. Other years it's like a whole week until the next garbage pickup. So whatever it is, if you have that option, it's fine. You can do it as you want.
Oh,
that's the problem. The problem is in your garbage can, the garbage can belongs to you, then that doesn't help. That's still in your rishus. Oh, so in the shtaris, we do sell the garbage can as well to the guy, and then we ask him permission to use it. So that's what that you can do. So that's an option. But I said that's not the best way to do it. Best is rather to try to figure out that try to be careful that the chametz gomer should go into one bag, and that bag you'll throw out somewhere else. And then the other stuff, that's fine. That's not such, chametz sheina gomer or tiny crumbs that are really moist and not really so edible at that point anyway. So that's fine. That will sell, like I said, we sell to the guy, and I'm sure he wants your garbage cans.
Is it better to dump crumbs outside or keep it in the trash?
Your choice. Again, it's going to be sold. You could dump it outside. Just obviously you run the risk of it going all over the place. So whatever makes your wife less nervous. So. Okay. I'm sorry? Yes. But again, that's a little funny mechira. Obviously the guy doesn't need it. But we say, okay, once he's buying everything which does have value, so he doesn't mind that you're throwing in other things as well. That's the reasoning behind it. But again, it's not necessarily the best thing. It's good to try to be careful if possible, if it's not at the cost of too much nerves and everything else. I'm sorry? Yes, but it doesn't help to be master chametz if it's still in your rishus. You have a chiv biur. You have a chiv to get rid of it. So, if you were master chametz and there's this big challah sitting on your couch, being mafker doesn't absolve you from the chiv to destroy it. You still have a chiv to destroy it. Any chametz in your house, you have a chiv to destroy. In your rishus, meaning in your garbage cans, you have a chiv to destroy. If it belongs to the guy, that's different.
So Friday morning, we could put the trash on the street with no trash can. Do the biddle.
Yeah, that works for you. I don't think such an option. I don't know. I don't know if the city, your neighbor is right. It's not. I don't know if that's necessarily the right thing to do. But each person can make that decision on their own. Okay, let's move on to I'm sorry.
Isn't it the guy's chametz, and therefore how do you have a right on Monday to put your garbage cans out?
He allows it. That's why. Yeah, I won't imagine. So he allows it. Yeah. So, yeah. Okay. Let's move on now to making your house ready for Pesach, extra cleaning, etc. So now, what you need to know about cleaning for Pesach is as follows. I spoke a little bit by Shal Shudis that Rav Elia Svei, the Rav Shiva of Philadelphia, the Tzal, used to say in the name of his father, who was one of the members of the Kavna Kailo, he used to say that the last form of Yiras Shemayim left by Yidden is cleaning for Pesach. So if you want to know what real Yiras Shemayim is, what Yiras Shemayim used to look like, look at the way people clean for Pesach. And it's true. It's totally out of proportion with the way we keep mitzvahs the rest of the year, right? We don't run screaming at a kid saying, "Hey, that's Lashon Hara!" We don't do that, right? Well, we do that with, someone was telling me his mother was ready to tackle his daughter because she dropped something on the floor. So there's a different attitude when it comes to chametz, and, that's the way it should be, really, with everything. But at least with chametz, we have a little bit of Yiras Shemayim left. So essentially, don't misunderstand me to think that I'm trying to say you don't need to do something. I'm not trying to say that. But if you're looking for guidelines, what it is that you're required to do, what the chiyuv is, so the chiyuv is as follows. There's a difference between the places where food goes and where food doesn't go. Places where food doesn't go, bedrooms, etc., where you're not eating and food is not going to go there, the chiyuv is to get rid of chametz, which is edible. Chametz, which is edible, means chametz, which you would think of eating. A Cheerio doesn't have to be kazayas, but it has something which has some sort of form, tzura, chashivos, where it would be reasonable that you would eat it. Like a Cheerio would be a good example of that. Tiny little crumbs is not really what you're looking for, what you need to clean from. We try to clean for everything, obviously, but again, that's not, it's for edible chametz, that's the real chiyuv, what you're cleaning for or what you're being biting for. That being said, that's why you don't need to wash the windows. That's not the obligation in those places. You don't have to wash the windows, you don't have to scrape the grout. That's not really what your chiyuv is. In the places where you eat, that's a whole different story. Because the places where you eat, the chiyuv over there is for a mashahu. We're chayshish even for a mashahu chametz. And mashahu has no amount. And that, hence, the Rosh says, and it's brought down to Shulchan Aruch, that Yisrael kedoshim heim, Yisrael are... They exhibit their holiness that they're megaronus like kesalim. They scratch down the walls. They sand down the walls, which I imagine what that means is like in those days, instead of papering their cabinets, they actually sanded the cabinets. They removed the surface. So us, even though we wash the cabinets and we Windex it and whatever we do, and there's nothing there, but we still paper it, even so, because for a mashul chametz we have an extra level of zahiris, and that's why you cover counters even though they're clean and so on and so forth. That's why we cover any area, any space that chametz can go, backsplashes, so on and so forth. Kashering we'll talk in a second. I mean, if you kasher it works as well, but that whatever you're not kashering, you need to cover because of a mashul. But that's only in the places where chametz go, where food chametz goes. I'm sorry. Where food chametz went, and you're planning on putting Pesach food, but any other place doesn't need to have that level of cleaning. Now, yeah. Yeah, the chashur will get on your food.
It's not an owning issue.
Correct. It's the eating, right. Mashu is only an issue of eating, not of owning, right. Owning is a kazax. Likewise, it's good to keep in mind that, even though, like I said, for, let's say, svarim, right? So what sort of chametz could be in svarim? Only mashul chametz, right? And that's why you don't chiv to bdika in svarim. It can't even be, but there's no way to be wedding svarim. Unless you're really planning, I don't know, some of us at home used to like shake out the sefer, that doesn't get anything out of it. So it was just one of those things you just did, make your mother happy. But it's really, if you really want to do something, you'd have to open it up and wipe down each page, which we don't do. So what you should keep in mind, though, is that any sort of sefer that you do put on your table during the year, if you have sidurim, obviously benchers, that you put on your table during the year, those should not be put on the table on Pesach. You can have them in your house. You can use them, but don't put them on your table on Pesach unless you wipe them off, you take the trouble to clean them properly. If you want to keep your benchers, you're going to have to wipe down each page, which is fine. You can do that. Wipe down each page, or you can get new benches for Pesach. Either one is fine. But that's what you need to do. So a sefer that you use during the year, a chumash, and you do take to put it on your table, should not be put on your table during Pesach. That you're eating. Sorry?
You brought it to the table during the year.
If it's a sefer that you brought to the table during the year, it should not be brought to the table on Pesach.
Do we need to clean it for the
Or you could clean it, right? Or you have a choice to clean it for Prams, right? Whichever one works for you. Svarim that you don't bring to the table during the year, svarim that you don't open it up at all during the year, certainly have that option of using it on Pesach. It's funny, in Hasidim tend to go to the extreme in these things. So like in Babov and Bara Park, they have whole sections of the Besmedesh that are boarded off. They don't. Those svarim are the chametz svarim. They're totally boarded off. You can't even access them on Pesach. And they have a whole other section of the Pesach svarim, that are opened up for Pesach, which they allow you to use on Pesach. So that's going to the extreme. But we don't need to do that. But al kapanim on your table is something that you should be careful with. So let's go. Let's go to I said you could use them. Just don't bring them to the table. Exactly. Please do use your svarim.
Don't need to look for
because that's pirurim. Those are drops. And also, like I said, if you'd want to, you would have to really do a real job, page by page, open it up totally. You could do also. I mean, best especially if you have little kids who are very fond of pulling out the svarim on the lower shelves. So the shelves need bedika, not the svarim so much. The shelves do need bedika. The makom shemachis and bechamis, very much so. There's all sorts of stuff there. So I mean, you'll clean there as well. But that's not this issue, right? I'm talking about in the actual sefer itself. That's correct. That's where this chumrah was said. Be very, very extra careful. Let's talk a little bit about Heksha. We've spoken already a number of things over the past weeks. I just want to sum it all up so that we could put it into, we could understand clearly how this works. Being Machshir your oven. Okay, so Machshir your oven, the easy way obviously is to just self-clean. If your oven has a self-clean, you put it on self-clean and that works. You are supposed to try to clean it before as well as you can. You don't have to knock yourself out, but you do, even before a self-clean, you should clean it before to try to make it as clean as possible, and then turn on the self-clean, and the rest is all ash, and that's fine. You don't even really have to take it out, but, for hygienic purposes, you might want to. But other than that, it's fine. Now, if your oven does not have a self-clean, so then we spoke, you don't really, halacha, do not have to do a self-clean. You just turn on the oven on the highest. And there, it does have to be cleaned properly. Clean your oven properly, with proper oven cleaners. Get any mamashes off, the stuff that you just, it doesn't have any mamashes, there's no feel to it, it's just, you see it there, you see a discoloration, that's fine, that you don't have to get rid of. Just try to get off whatever mamashes you can. Again, you don't have to rub get your knuckles raw, even if there's a tiny mamashes, but it's all black, that's also okay. Then you turn on your oven for the highest for like an hour, and then you're good. That does everything that works for the oven, that works for the grates, that works for the glass. And in addition, what you could do, and you should do this anyway, is that you can kasher your grates on your range that way too, which is what you do is you take the grates off the range, and if you have your oven on the highest already and it has reached a temperature and it's been like that for a while, you put them in the oven after they've been cleaned, you put them in the oven for 10, 15 minutes, and that helps for them too. Because also, mikradin, they don't need to be kashered because they don't come in contact with food. They just come in contact with the pot. So as long as they're clean, they don't really need hefsher, but we're machmer to be machsher them, and this hefsher is sufficient. So you could take those grates, put them into the oven when it's on the top temperature for 10, 15 minutes, and that's enough for them. The rest of the range, if you have a metal range, the minigas, we cover it with silver foil, so that when food falls down, you know, it should fall on the silver foil and shouldn't get mixed back in, so on and so forth. Whatever, the minigas to cover it. But the actual grates itself, you can put in the oven last 10 minutes and that's enough. The handles of the range as well, we cover, also a minig. Don't really have to, but it's a minig, because whenever we're handling food, we don't want to be touching something that you touch with chametzig hands. And touch again. It's all the chumrah of mashahu. We go over the top when it comes to these things. So now if you have a glass top range, speak to someone who knows how to kasher it. It's tricky. It cracks. You have to do a real hechsher on it. So I'm not sure what the right way to do with a glass top range is. You have to speak to someone who knows that, who's done it before and can tell you exactly how to do it without it cracking. I don't have any experience with that. Other than that, the electric range itself, you can turn, I think those things, they can just turn them on because they themselves become red hot. So that will be sufficient. They just clean them, they turn red hot, and that's enough. You know, the coils. That's all you need to do. You don't need to do anything more than that. So you cover. You can cover with silver foil. Now, what's interesting about an oven, a range, so the oven, we're done with, you know, that's all you need to do. What's interesting with a range is the hood. Above the hood above the range, if you'll feel there, it's full of grease. So that would indicate that a lot of grease from the steam is going up there, and then you would think you're cooking on Pesach, it'll come back down. But the truth is that it's never hot by the time it gets up there. The zeya that gets up there is never hot when it gets that high, not even close. So technically it's not really a problem. So you could really leave it as is. Some people do cover it, which means you'd do a little bit of an effort. You'd have to like tape some silver foil on the inside of the hood. It's a nice thing to do. You want to do it, fine. You don't have to. You could clean it as well. It's a little bit of a job to clean it. Take my advice, it's easier to just tape some silver foil on. That's halacha with the range and with the knife. Now, microwave. We spoke that a microwave could be kashered. It depends if you have any minig with kashering plastic. Obviously, if your minig is not to kasher plastic, then you shouldn't kasher a microwave. But if you do feel that you could kasher plastic, so you can. It depends how dirty your microwave got. We mentioned this. If your microwave gets very dirty, then I don't think you should kasher it either because it has all the little holes and the food gets in there. Very hard to kasher. Halachically, it's difficult to kasher. I would suggest investing $50, buying yourself a Pesach microwave, assuming you have a place to store it. But otherwise, if it doesn't get so dirty, so you can kasher it. This is the way you kasher it. It has to be very clean. It has to be totally clean. And then the way you kasher it is you put in a bowl of water. You turn on the microwave until that bowl of water starts bubbling so that it fills up the microwave with steam. Turn it off. Let it cool for a moment, and then turn on the microwave again. And what you accomplished is that it coated the whole wall of the microwave with this zeya, with this the liquid. It got wet as much as is possible. And then when you turn on the microwave again, then it'll heat up the moisture that's on the wall, and thus you'll be kashering the walls of the microwave. That's the you don't have to feel the walls. I'm sorry. So what you do is you fill up a bowl, you let it bubble, let the mist, you know, the steam circulate around in the microwave. Hopefully it'll coat the walls as much as it does, typically. Then do it one more time so that the steam on the wall itself will be getting heated up directly and thereby kashering. So in other words, you do it two times. That's what you're doing. Or I guess you just leave it on for a while if you don't want to turn it off immediately after it starts bubbling. So if you see it starts bubbling and you let it go like that for a few minutes, that's also just as good. So you put in a amount of water that's safe, a microwave safe bowl, and your microwave is kashered. After your microwave is kasher, there's two things you have to be careful with. First of all, the glass tray, we hold you can't kasher. I mean, Ashkenazim hold you can't kasher glass. Sfaradim have no problem, but Ashkenazim hold you can't kasher glass. So the glass needs to be, you have to cover it with something, which means, you know, you can't put whatever it is you're putting directly on it. So you can cover it with a piece of vinyl if you want, that's microwave safe, or you could just switch it.
They make, I think Kugler's has them even. So you get support pillow. Kugler's, I think they have, it's like a rubber thing that goes on top. It's mamish, like it fits perfectly.
Right, it's made for that. Right.
It's like made for covering.
So you could do that, any one of those things. But it needs to be covered. You can't put the Pesach bowl directly on that. And the other thing you need to do is that whenever you do use it over Pesach, it should l'chatchila be covered, the food that you're making in the microwave. Because you should really, you should try not to rely on this hechsher as much as possible, so it should be covered. When I say covered, I don't mean hermetically sealed, I don't mean double covered, I just mean covered, which means even as much as, let's say, you have something on a paper plate, put another paper plate on top of it. Mostly covered, that's enough. Halachically, the way it works with Zeya, that's enough. With whatever little is uncovered, we say it doesn't really produce Zeya. Whatever the halachic reasoning is, take my word for it, that's enough. It doesn't have to be, you have to knock yourself out covering it. But you should make the effort to cover it.
So even if you kasher the microwave?
Even if you kasher it, you should still try to cover the food that you're putting in there as much as possible. When you do the thing, yeah, you can use a chametz bowl provided it's 24 hours since the last use. Yeah. Doesn't have to be a Pesach bowl. Right.
If you did a Pesach,
it would become chametz. Right, correct. fine, so that's how you mash the microwave. Now, the sink and the counter, as we spoke about a little bit on Shabbos, again, run through it quickly. This is the story. Essentially, it would have been enough, Maker Adin, to kasher sinks and counters with just Irui, which means you heat up hot water till it's bubbling, and then just pour the hot water on the sink, pour the hot water on the counters. That really would have been enough. Why? Because that's typically the only way any taste gets into it, through spills, through something falling on it. And even if a solid that's hot falls on it, in halachic terminology, when a solid thing falls on something which is cold, it's just as if a liquid spilled on it. It's all the same, kids. We all look at it like the same, which means it has a very minimal amount of absorbance of tam. Only a kite klipa, only the topmost part of it absorbs, and therefore it's enough in order to get the taste out. All you have to do is pour hot water. So meikar hadin, this is the real ikar halacha, your sink and your counters can be kashered with just pouring hot water on them. And the reason why I'm saying this is because that has, you know, that minimally has to be done. If you're going to be using your counters and sink, stainless steel sink, uncovered without any insert or anything else, you have to at least make sure you do a proper job with kashering it with the hot water. Now, proper job means that you have to make sure the hot water, while it's still hot, is getting onto every inch of the sink, right? So it means it has to get over the whole bottom. You have to do very methodically, make sure it gets onto every spot. It can't spread. That doesn't work. It has to come from the pot and hit each inch of your sink. Okay? Spreading doesn't work, because once it spreads, it becomes a klisheni. The heat has to come from a kli rishon. So it has to hit from the pot on every spot, likewise on the sides. Do the best you can, try to get the sides as much as you can, and you can do the same thing for the faucet as well. You know, obviously, if you could, I'm sorry?
Use a pump spot.
Yes. Yeah, same story. You can use either, really. Here it doesn't make a difference because you're pouring, so it won't make a difference either way. So you could use either, as long as it's an enabinyam. Main thing is it should be an enabinyam. So that's how you do it. Likewise, the same thing on the counters. On the counters, it becomes a little more complicated. The reason is because if you picture yourself doing it on a wide counter, right? So you're pouring along the edge of your counter, so some of it spills over onto the floor. The other part, travels along the counter, right? And then you finish your pot, and then you go to heat up more water, that water cools down. And then when you try to do iri again, you can't do iri onto cold water, because that'll cool it off. So you'll have to dry off your counter. So it's a little bit more of a pain in the neck to do counters. It's more, just to be more methodical about it, but that's the correct way to do it, which means you pour the water as much as you can pour it, so you can decide which way makes more sense, in long vertical stripes or in horizontal stripes, whichever way works better, but you make those stripes, and then wherever you stopped and you go to heat up more water, right, make sure to dry off the area that you now want to continue kashering has to be dry. So in the interim, while the water is heating up, that area has to be dried off, and then you continue to pour more water as you go along, and again, you stop, dry off that area. So that is, needs to be done no matter what. That's the minimal amount of kashering necessary. Let me just clarify here one more thing. When we're talking about kashering counters and sinks, obviously a porcelain sink can't be kashered, that's cheres. Only a stainless steel sink can be kashered, and could be kashered, there's no problem with that. And countertops, granite is accepted that it could be kashered. And for mica, depends if you kasher plastic, and typically the minute is for Pesach, you really don't kasher plastic. So I wouldn't advise kashering for mica, but granite can be kashered in this way. Now, you have a question? Yeah.
I understand the water has to be going direct into every spot.
Right.
But if, unlike the counters, if there's hot water that's still there while you're pouring, that's okay.
Yeah, as long as it's very burning hot, it's not cooling down.
It's the same pour.
It won't be cooling down the water, right. It's more of the counters because it has a few minutes until you get back there, it cools off. That's where it's a problem. Exactly. Also, in a sink, it doesn't collect. That's why it's a big difference. In a sink, most of it runs down. It's just a residue. That's fine. And a counter, we can really collect over there if you don't dry it off. That's what makes it a bigger problem. And, well, you could, but you would probably have to make some sort of a simen on the other half. So you'd have to cover it or do something to, you know, do some form of a simen so that you shouldn't get confused. Now Mishabura says, yeah.
Do we have to do it from a pot, a heated butter with pot, or if we also use one of those things to heat up water?
Sure, that's fine. That bubbles. That's like a filler. It doesn't hold that much water. But,
it's a little easier because with a pot, it's just
yeah.
You take your pot and you put a smaller pot in.
Yeah, you burn yourself, right? Yeah. Sure.
There's this row, I think somebody suggests using an iron on water poured on the
So let me explain that. That's what I'm about to get to. The reason for that suggestion is because Mishabura really says that regular irui, pouring hot water, is not sufficient for counters and it's not sufficient for sinks. And the reason why he says it's not sufficient is because he brings down a Chuvas Mahariv that says that anything that chametz, solid chametz, let's say a knish, which was hot, was put down on, irui is not sufficient. And what you need to do is you have to simulate as if you were actually cooking the countertop itself in water. You know, it's real hagala, not just pouring hot water. It has to be as if you're cooking the countertop. Now, how do you cook the countertop itself? You can't put the whole countertop into a pot. So what you do is something called evan malubin, which is you take a very hot stone which has been put on the fire, or you take a piece of metal that's on the fire, and then when you pour the water over that stone so that the water is being cooked as it's falling. So it's as if it's in the pot. That's the reasoning behind it. So Mishabura says that's the way you need to kasher your counter, and that's the way you need to kasher your sink. So obviously you understand it makes it that much more complicated and difficult. So in a sink is one thing, it's doable. It's a smaller area, the water runs away, doesn't get on you, won't burn you. You could have one person hold the stone and you pour over it. But a counter, I find that it's very hard to do a good job if you're trying to do with both. So my personal feeling is it's more adif to do one of the other. Either if you're dead set on kashering your counters, you're probably better off just kashering it regularly, you know, with regular irui, and this way you're insured that at least you'll do the real ikar ha-halacha. Obviously, if you can do it with a evan malubin, fine. They're certainly, go ahead and try. That's why they come up with this, the eitzah of putting the iron is the same idea. You're cooking the water on the counter. In Eretz Yisrael, they don't have the acres of countertop that we have. They have a couple of feet of countertop, so it's not such a big deal. But if you're going to try it on a large counter, you'll find it to be very, very not practical. So as a rule, again, it's just my personal feeling is I suggest it's easier to cover countertops. You know, you can survive with the, it doesn't look that aesthetically nice, but it's for a week, you know, if it's a very Pesach Liga feel, you can do that. But again, if you want to, you can. But you should just know that the Ikar Halacha is to catch with Iroi. The Mishabura says you should. Mishabura says this, you know, quite definitively, that it should be done with an Evan Malubin. So you can definitely try to do it that way. But at least make sure that the main kashering is done properly. Like I said, that you do it on every spot, and then you make sure to wipe off, you know, in between rounds, wipe off wherever the water has gone. That you have to make sure that you do. On Shabbos, we discussed a couple of other creative ways to kasher your sink. You can fill it up with hot water, and then drop in an evan malubin. what happens is, depending how you do that, if you fill up your sink with hot water, what you would need to do is, here in the tower, it's not relevant, but if you're home, you can turn on put your water heater to the highest temperature possible, and then run the water into your sink, let it fill up till the top, and it's very hot water, and then you have this whatever iron thing it is that you're heating up on your stove, you drop it in. Now, I'll tell you what's going to happen is the water will come shooting out, like flying in your face, so be careful. But my guest, the Shabbos, said that he has perfected a different method of doing this, which does not have that effect. He says to buy a few thin sheets of metal, like they sell in Home Depot, thinner sheets, of like a sheet of metal, a couple of sheets, and drill a few holes in them, and then heat those up, and you drop them in, and they sink in. That doesn't cause that effect. Not taking any responsibility. Apply with care, but he does say that works much better.
So the sheets get to be?
They get red. I mean, not red, but you can tell when they've started to seriously heat up. No, put them directly on the range, on your grill. Yeah, let them sit on the range. You'll see, they get red. They actually do very quickly, especially if they're thin. Then take it with a pot with a proper pliers or tongs, drop it in, and that'll do a good job. So that's actually the easiest way to kasher your sink. Much easier than pouring it over. For a sink at least, fill it up to the top. You don't have to turn on the hot water heater to the highest. I'm just saying it just makes things work better. You don't have to do that. If it's at 120 or 130 or whatever, that's fine, because these metal plates will cause this to really bubble. You'll see right away when you drop them in, the water will stop bubbling, and then that's fine. So that's a neat, nice, easy way to kasher a stainless steel sink.
Metal plates have to be why more than one plate?
I don't know. That's I'm just you want it to work. That's all. So I don't know exactly how many you need. I didn't ask him exact details. Just take one or two and drop them in. He claims it works and it won't sprit you. So try the first time. Be careful, but after that. Maybe. Probably have the same effect. Right. But his idea was more that it shouldn't be all concentrated in one spot, because that's what causes it to happen, when the hot thing drops it in one spot with no surface area. I don't know. We'll all try it, and we'll compare notes. Yeah. Well,
how big does the oven need to be?
It's not a question of size. It has to cause the water in the sink to bubble. That's what it has to cause. It has to be big enough for that. So dropping in a nail is not going to do that. It has to be big enough to do that. Well?
So to fill the sink with
the hottest water you can manage, and then drop in these things, and you'll see, if you're doing it right, it will bubble. It'll probably explode. If it doesn't, at least minimally it'll bubble, and then you know you've done your job. You should be pretty wet by the time you finish kashering. If you're not, then you're doing something wrong. You can. You can. It was suggested already. You can also nuke your kitchen. I don't suggest either. I'll tell you why. I actually heard this from a mashgiach. You have to really know what you're doing when using a blowtorch, because a blowtorch works, but you have to be very experienced at doing it very evenly and very uniformly. If it's at all done uniformly, in other words, you focus the fire in one place more than any other place, it'll cause it to warp instantly. And that's not worth the expense. Also, around the edges where where it's attached to the thing, you're going to ruin the counter, you're going to ruin the sealant. So it's not worth it. I don't suggest it. He was even doing it on a commercial kitchen. Everything is one solid piece of stainless steel. But even so, he says, you totally ruin it if you don't really know what you're doing, and you also burn yourself. And he had burned himself many times, and he was experienced. So and not suggested. Okay, let me move on, because let's try to catch a little bit about Bedikas Chametz. Okay, so the night of Bedikas Chametz, you're now allowed to eat or drink or be involved in any other malacha or learn starting from a half hour before Tzeis HaKachavim, right? So whenever Tzeis HaKachavim is, a half hour before, you already have to stop. If you need to, you can actually make a shomer. For that half hour, a shomer works. So you have a shomer that's going to remind you to do your Bedika. For that half hour, a shomer works. So if you want to learn then, you could make a shomer for that half hour. But once the Zman Bedika comes, then you can't do that. And likewise, you shouldn't waste time. You should do bedika. So the zman of bedika is in the beginning of the night. So bedika should be done as soon as possible. Should not be pushed off. You could daven ma'ar first. There's different minhagim with that, but the general minhag is everybody daven ma'ar first, especially in shul. You have a kuvah digas minyan, and probably won't even find a minyan later on. So you can and should daven ma'ar first if that works out better for you. Now, you have to be biting everything on the night of your Dalet, you have to be, or your Gimel, whatever it is you're doing your B'dika. Now, if anybody finds it very, very difficult to do the whole B'dika the night of Erev Pesach because there's so much to do and etc., there is another option. You can do some of the B'dika before. The B'dika, as long as it's done at night, and it's done L'ar HaNer, right, which can be a flashlight. So as long as you do the B'dika properly, you can start it the night before, two nights before, three nights before. You have to be sure that Chano Chametz gets into those room afterwards, obviously. But B'dika can be done those nights. And as long as you leave over a significant amount for the night of B'dika's Chametz, if that makes your life easier, that is the L'chadchila Diga option, right? So you can be biting your bedrooms, let's say, sometime in the week before Pesach, and this way, the night of Erev Pesach, all you have to do is your kitchen and things like that. That's L'chadchila. The bracha, obviously, you'll only make the night before, but you can start your B'dika that way. It just has to be done with a flashlight and at night. So B'dika always has to be done with a flashlight or a candle. I would suggest starting with a candle so that you're Mekayim that, you know, Inyan, could be this Inyan Abisoid as well. So start with a candle, then blow it out. We don't need any. There's been terrible stories. So a flashlight is L'chadchila. You do not have to turn off the lights in the room. Lights can remain on. They don't have to be turned off. You can be biting with the lights on. That's L'chadchila as well. Some people say you shouldn't use an LED. Personally, I don't think there's a difference. You can use whatever type of flashlight works better for you. And that's fine. You can't eat until you finish B'dika. So again, that might be another reason why you might want to start the night before. But till you finish B'dika, you can't eat. And your L'chadchila should be biting everything that night. So therefore, you should be biting your car, packets, etc. All those things should be biting. If you have an office, that also needs to be baidik, the night of B'dikas Chametz, if it belongs to you. You know, if you rent an office, or if you have a designated office space, which is yours, so you, so to speak, it's yours, it needs to be baidik. Now, as far as an office space, Paiskim are a little bit more makel. They say you can be baidik the next day, if it's like a crazy turkha for you to go back to your office, B'dikas Chametz at night. So obviously, you do have the option of being baidik before. If you're not going to work over Pesach, then just sell it. Yeah, so that's easy. Yeah, if you're not going to work over Pesach, just sell it. But you can, if you are renting it, you can sell it. If you just have a cubicle, I don't even know. I'm not even sure what the status of that is. I guess you'll sell it as much as it could be sold. Other than that, if you are going into work, then it does need a bedika. So there are places that are makel. It's a big tercha. You could be bedika the next day when you go into work.
The
previous day, if you're not going in Erev Pesach, then you could do it the previous day. But again, it needs to be done with a flashlight, and it should preferably be done right away, so that you know you're not mastic with anything else. So if it's the day before, it doesn't really make such a big difference. But if you're doing it on the day of Erev Pesach itself, let's say going into work Erev Pesach, it should be done the first thing that you do. You should really not even eat before you do that, and you should be biting the place where you work. Likewise, if you weren't biting your cars at night because it's too difficult, too dark, it's scary, whatever, be biting them first thing in the morning. And be biting them with a flashlight as best as you can.
So you can do the
B'dika
by day in the office?
Yeah, people are makel to do a B'dika by day because it's sometimes very a tremendous terechah to make people be biting, you know, go back to their office so that you can be makel on that spot. It should be done the first thing in the morning. That's that is the correct way to do it.
First thing in the morning on?
Either if you do it on your gimel, then do it on your gimel, or on your dalet. Whenever it is you do your B'dika, do it. Likewise, you know, if it is easier for you to stay late one night, one of these weeks, so stay late and just make sure you don't bring chametz after that. You know, if you want to eat your lunch, eat it somewhere else, whatever. So that's, be careful with it. So then that works as well.
You do thoroughly be biting everything at night at the Medica as if we were checking in for the first time?
So there's different opinions about that. Big Tzadikim spent the whole night doing Medica's chametz. Other Sepaiskim, and this is brought down La Halacha, brought down in Mishabura, that the minig was not to be so extensive with the B'dika because the women clean and they come out and made it a Makam Shem Echnis and Vechametz after they finish cleaning. That's why, for some people, hold that's the reason why there's a minig to put out the 10 pieces of bread, because we're worried that maybe it's not even called a Makam Shem Echnis and Vechametz anymore. It's not Makiv, but that's the reason for the minig. So that is the source for, and it has a real source in Halacha that you don't have to, you know, go overboard with your B'dika. And you look, you know, you have to look around, just look, make sure to look in every place. Have to look at every place. Like I said, you know, it doesn't mean you have to mamish, you know, go digging in every spot, even though they give you that feather and spoon. You know, it's symbolic. But akapanim, you have to look and look. You do have to try to look in every spot. It does say you have to do bedika on your pockets. You don't have to stick the flashlight in the pockets. That you can do with your hand. But some form of bedika needs to be done. Now, adults' pockets, we hope ostensibly you don't stick food into. But a children's pockets should be a bedika should be done if they're washed in a washing machine in a way that you're hoping the food got out of it. That's fine. All backpacks important to be bedik. They will have chametz. fine.
Sorry,
yeah.
How long should it take to do a typical bedika? What's the range of
right. I guess you can measure your shemayim by that. No, I mean, there's no real answer to that because, like I said, everything has a source in halacha. Some people, and really, I'm not being, you know, I'm saying, halachically speaking, la halacha, they held it was enough to walk around and make a cursory bedika, look in every place, you know, azai, not really knock yourself out, because la halacha, the women cleaned, and that's enough. And I'm just saying, other people, they were more stringent than themselves, and they made it as if nothing had ever been checked, and nothing had ever been cleaned, and they went go digging in every, and then it takes a number of hours. So, all ways have their own makar la'alacha, everything is eiskehalten. You can do what your father did, you can do, you know, as you understand, and they're all okay.
How old is the age for, say, kids bringing Talmud Torah? Until what age can we say kids know not to bring it?
19? I haven't gotten to that point yet, so I'm not sure. Definitely anywhere up to 7, 8, there's no without a question. You know, they're tracking comments. That doesn't mean to say that they'll bring comments where they totally doesn't make sense that they'll bring comments. Like your private bathroom and in your bedroom is not really a makom shemachnisim b'chametz. You don't have to assume there's comments there. But the places that they really access, you know, definitely the places where they hang around a lot, certainly are a real makom shemachnisim. You have to do a proper cleaning. Minimally, the cleaning should be done well.
If the kids are sleeping at night, and now Seis is really late.
Right. So what should you do?
Yeah.
So do what I would say is do as much as you can do without waking them up. You know, and do a bedika. Means go in there, you know, with your flashlight, look under their beds or whatever. Do the cursory bedika as much as you can. And if you feel you should be doing more bedika, finish it by day. You know, you don't have to wake them up. You can rely on those shitas that are cursory bedikas enough. I've never had a problem with that. They're up anyway. they wanna witness the bedikas comments. Or, you know, if they're asleep, the attack is sleeping, then they'll stay asleep. But again, you can do as you understand. Okay, I want to mention just a few halachas quickly. Just, you know, everybody should be aware of them. Tainus b'chayrim. So the halacha with tainus b'chayrim is as follows: anybody who's a b'char obviously has to fast. But if you have a son that is a b'char who is not bar mitzvah yet, even if it's a yesodayfin, even if it's a C-section, you need to fast for him or go to see him. Right? So if your oldest is a son, you have, this is the first year I'm not going to have a problem with making seum. I have someone who's bar mitzvah this year. Until then, I have to go to see him every year. Going to see him means you have to eat from the seum. You don't have to eat a kazayas, it becomes a mad rush. You know, you have to eat something, though. But you do have to eat something. If you don't eat anything, you haven't accomplished anything. So you have to eat something, but you don't have to eat a kazayas. Another halacha that's very important to know is that after chatzos, Erev Pesach has the same halacha like Chol HaMoed. In other words, whatever malachas you're not allowed to do in Chol HaMoed, you can't do after chatzos Erev Pesach. If you don't know what the halachas of Chol HaMoed are, please see me afterwards. I should really give a shiur about that too. But for practically speaking, you can't do laundry, you can't take a haircut, you could cut your nails. The chachili is supposed to cut your nails before chatzos, but if you didn't, you can cut it after. But and real malachas, it's davar avad, you could, so on and so forth. But those two things are usually the most relevant, that you can't do laundry and you can't cut your hair. A goy, the exception for Erev Pesach, where it's different than Chol HaMoed, is that it can be done with a goy. So you can go to a goyish barber, that's fine, and you can have, if you have a goyta, if you're lucky enough, you can have her turn on the washing machine. Or you could try to get a guy to come in and turn on the washing machine, you know, whatever. But if all else fails, and you're really stuck and you have a serious issue with your laundry, so there is a makom to be made. Because it's just a machine, it's just pushing a button, it's not like what it used to be, washing. So there is a makom to be made. But definitely it's something to be made some life to be careful about, to see that it's done before chatzos, because it's a real halacha that it shouldn't be done after chatzos. Okay, time is really up, but I just want to mention a couple of things that are negiah this year for the Seder. this year, the first night of Pesach is Shabbos, and the second night is Matzah Shabbos. Therefore, the first night you have to say Vayechulu, and the second night you have to say Havdalah. If you, that's unlikely, but if you do forget, and I've seen it happen, if you forget to say Vayechulu the first night, or if you forget to say Havdalah the second night, you are in somewhat of a pickle, because you've drunk the first kais. And the halacha is, which is interesting halacha, you may not know this, is that if you forget to say Vayechulu, you have to say Vayechulu again on a kais. The Vayechulu of Kiddush needs to be said on a kais. So if you forget Vayechulu by the first night, or if you forget Havdalah, which obviously has to be done on a kais, so you need to make Havdalah, you need to say Vayechulu on a kais, but you're not supposed to drink in between the kaises. So it's like this. If it's immediately, if you realize it like as you're drinking the kais, before you started doing anything else, then it's fine. You can do it right away. Immediately after the kais, you can drink another kais. So, like, you just drank the first kais, you chapped, oh, I didn't say vayechulu, you can just take another kais, you don't have to make another bracha, you say vayechulu, or if you didn't do havdalah, you say havdalah, which means you do the regular order of havdalah, ner, and then bar mer'esh, and then amato. If you started saying the Haggadah, which means you said halach ma'anya, especially if you already did karpas, then you are in trouble. Because then you're not allowed to drink at that point. You're not allowed to be mafsik in between the middle of the Haggadah until you get to the second kais. So what you should do is wait until you get to the second kais, make the bracha of Asher Ga'alanu, and before you make the Bayer Priya Gafen, say Vayechulu al kais. It'll look very funny. It'll be doing something very interesting. Tell me about it if it happens. But Al-Kapana, make Vayechulu. I have a good story for the next time. But make Vayechulu al Hakais, and then say Bayer Priya Gafen and drink it by Haseba. Or if you're doing Havdalah, then make Bayer Priya Gafen, the regular order of Havdalah. Bayer Priya Gafen, Bayer Mere'esh, Havdalah, and then drink Bahaseba. So it'll make for some interesting things. And whenever you remember, you do that. Same thing. Berchas Hamazon, you know, if you chap by the third kais, oh, I didn't make Havdalah, so then do it by the third kais, fourth kais, same thing. After the fourth kais, I don't know what you should do. I'm not sure what Allah is. Don't come knocking on my door. Fine. One other thing I just want to mention, an interesting thing, with the wine for Arba Kaisis. So if you use grape juice, fine, use grape juice. But if you use wine, so even though there is a hiddur to take red wine, it says it's a special hiddur in red wine, but you should know the main thing is, the hiddur number one is that you should like what you're drinking. That's the most important hiddur. It should be chavav. Chavav is number one. After chavav, the other milas come into play. So if whatever it is, whatever wine you like, let's say it's Bartanura, is your favorite wine, that's really what you enjoy, and you don't enjoy the other wines as much, even though it's not red wine, that's fine. And that's the chavkila to use. That's the main mila. It's important to know that. People mix in red in order to make it red. Like they use this Bartanura or whatever is white wine, and they mix in some red. Lahalachet mutter, there were paiskim that had an issue with it. I've heard Ramesha had an issue with it, even though normally we hold in Sviya Ba'echlem, there's no isra of being Seveya, dying by food, but here he held it is, you do have an isra of Sviya. So I don't know if that's the best route to take. Rather, just use the white wine, enjoy it, and you're mekayim the mitzvah lachatchila that way. The last thing I want to say is that, I'm sure everybody's familiar with this. You shouldn't be mafsik with dibur. You know, you shouldn't speak after you make the bracha of achilas matzah until you after kairich, because the bracha of achilas matzah needs to go on kairich as well. So you shouldn't be mafsik. You know, I don't know if you have to make a big macha. If people at seder are, you don't have to disturb the whole ruach because of it. It's a chumrah, but it's definitely for yourself. You should do it. If you have a big crowd and you're running the seder, it might be a good idea. My father-in-law is very makbar on this to segregate all the maror packets before. Now, that's just to make things go quicker, and there shouldn't be a need for so much talking. He prepares all the maror. It means because you know to make sure you have enough of a shear. So he has the romaine lettuce measured out. He's a yeki. He has it weighed on a small little scale, you know, and had little plastic bags. And so you just toss them out. And that's a good idea, a suggestion, if you want to make things move smoothly and quickly. Okay? Hakashem is a man.